Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
The constitutional amendment that was put forward by, I think, 9 state representatives.
Somehow it got whittled down to 7, so I think maybe somebody dropped out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfortunate for them.
7's a pretty good number. The maximum is 10.
If I was a state rep, I would be honored to have co-sponsored this thing. I don't want to be a state rep, though. I mean, it's $100 per year.
You got my vote if you decide to run.
It's a useless... Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. I don't see myself running for state rep. Maybe as a Democrat.
You're qualified now. You've been here more than 2 years.
That's true.
And, you know, running as a Democrat... It would be very interesting in Keene, New Hampshire.
Well, that is my next political affiliation, yeah. Is the Democratic Party, so I don't know. I don't know what I'll do, you know, make these decisions on the spur of the moment. I didn't even plan to run for mayor until you reminded me that the filing was coming up. I was like, yeah, sure, why not?
It costs $2, by the way, to run for state representative in New Hampshire if you are a Republican or a Democrat.
Right. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I mean, you can collect signatures, I think, to get that $2 waived if you want.
You could. If you want to spend the hours and hours it would take you to collect, I think, 120 or 150 signatures, which is no easy task.
No, it's easier just to pay the $2, yeah. For sure. And you can collect signatures, I think, to get on the ballot as a Libertarian or something, or as some other unaffiliated party. Mm-hmm. But really, it's not worth it. There's enough openings within the Cheshire County and the city of Keene where you can exploit it to great success.
We're going to have a public hearing on this.
Yes, they can't avoid it.
Every bill in New Hampshire has to have a public hearing. This is one of the reasons, if you go to look at the 101 Reasons Why Liberty Lives in New Hampshire, there's a great little documentary. You can go see it at 101reasonsfilm.com. There's also a PDF version on the Free State Project's website of those 101 reasons. One of the reasons why New Hampshire was chosen as the destination for the largest libertarian migration is because its political system is incredibly good. Like, politics sucks, but on the scale of political systems, New Hampshire's is accessible and it's fairer than a lot of them, so which is why every single bill gets a hearing. For example, in Texas, you know, Texas, that free state, which is a bunch of malarkey.
Yeah.
But in Texas, earlier this year, there was a state representative who put forward a Texas secession quote-unquote bill. And I say quote-unquote because all it would have done, if it were to have passed, would have simply been a resolution, or it's like a non-binding resolution, basically, that says, we, Texas, are going to start beginning to look about thinking about how to start beginning to consider seceding, right? Like one of those sort of things.
One of these
meaningless,
watered-down Brexit-style things.
Not even. Just a consideration of a thing. Mike Sylvia, who's the prime sponsor of this particular piece of legislation, which is, by the way, the number has now been assigned to it. That's the big news, is it's CACR 32 here in New Hampshire. It stands for Constitutional Amendment Concurrent Resolution. It's a bit of a mouthful.
But and Mike Sylvia, he's not on like his first term as a state rep.
I think it's his fifth term now point. So he finally felt like, all right, it's time. So I think that he probably has been a supporter quietly of New Hampshire independence, but just didn't feel like the political winds were, you know, shifted around. The you know, state reps to some extent are, you know, always licking their thumb and sticking it up the air to see what, you know, what they got to do. And
they want to push. I mean, the libertarian state reps, the free stater state reps, they want to push the government toward freedom. And they can't do that if they go straight to 100 miles per hour and lose their next election because there's no political support for, you know, a declaration of independence.
At this point, he's willing to go ahead and risk it and say, all right, well, I've had a good 4 terms. Let's go with this and see how it goes. And so he filed this thing. He got co-sponsors, almost not quite the maximum, but a large number of co-sponsors. And they filed this thing a few months ago. We've been just basically waiting as the slow gears of government have been turning behind the scenes.
I look forward to, you know, participating and hopefully helping determine how this stuff develops.
Yeah, and so what needs to happen next is the supporters of independence in New Hampshire need to contact this particular committee. And there's a link on the NHX. If you go to nhexit.us, there's an article all about this, and there's a link there to that committee. There's a mailing link, an email link. You can send one email to this sort of generic address for the committee, and then the system forwards that to all 21 reps. You don't even have to figure out all the different reps' emails. You just send it to that one email, let them know what you think. And remember, the important point here is these reps don't have to agree with independents to support this thing.
Right, that's the critical part here.
You don't have to argue with them. You don't have to try to persuade them about independence, because a bunch of them are going to be, you know, sticking the muds on this. Like the head of this particular committee, his name is Al Baldessaro. He's like a former Marine. Okay, he's a Republican former Marine. You know, he's got it banged into his head about government good, right? But he's also, to his credit, a critic of big government in a lot of ways. So, yeah, there's still a question mark as far as whether or not he himself would support independence.
I have a little bit of a history with the FBI. I was never a very big fan of the FBI. Mm-hmm. Then they kicked in my door at one point this year, and I became even less of a fan of the FBI. So when I see stories like this, it just fills my heart with joy. FBI officials had sex with prostitutes while overseas. An inspector general investigation finds. Now, I'm not opposed to the FBI or to anyone hiring prostitutes. I think sex work is work and it should be completely legal.
Yeah, anyone who supports a free market should have that particular viewpoint. Whether or not you agree with people selling their bodies for money.
Well, everyone sells their bodies to one degree or another.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just which particular act of selling your body do you find detestable? I mean, it's your body, whatever, however you want to sell it. If you want to break your back working in a coal mine, or, you know, sell your voice to national radio or whatever, I don't care.
Yep.
It's your body. But the FBI disagrees because they're enforcing the laws of the U.S. government, and the U.S. government has laws against prostitution.
Do they? I thought those were state laws.
Oh, fair point. Well, they work
with
states.
What are they doing?
They work with states in order to create stings for sex trafficking. And
well, right. Yeah, they would be involved in
stuff.
Sex trafficking because, you know, if you're crossing borders, then they would get involved. But I think just by default, you probably aren't going to see the FBI involved in your standard, like, street level sting in whatever city.
A sixth FBI official was also found to have committed misconduct for failing to report suspected violations. It is unclear what happened to the sixth official. But of the five who solicited commercial sex, two resigned, two retired, and one was removed. So,
they actually got rid of somebody.
Well, they got rid of one of them.
Yeah.
Two of them resigned. Two of them, you know, they were at retirement age anyway, so they get to keep all their government benefits.
Yeah, get them bennies.
So,
90% paycheck for the rest of their lives.
It's absolutely disgusting that the FBI agents aren't being tried, considering, you know, if they were...
They didn't do anything illegal.
They did, though.
Where was this happening? Did they say where
in
Europe?
It doesn't say what the other country is. I mean, it doesn't even specify that.
I mean, if
Europe.
It's in the Netherlands, then it's completely legal what they did.
But
it's just against policy.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but if you or I flew to the Netherlands and hired a prostitute, wouldn't that be illegal?
I don't know. I can't give you legal advice. I'm not a lawyer, but... generally, going to another country and engaging in a legal activity in that other country typically doesn't result in criminal charges when you come home, although there may be some exceptions. There may be some exceptions to that.
In other news, though, the FBI is corrupt, so that's not a surprise to anyone.
Listen, Aria, you know it's just a few bad apples. I'm sure most of the FBI are just a good bunch of guys and gals.
I've been hearing... Bonnie and Ian mentioned Wim Hof recently, so I just wanted to offer up. I've been practicing Wim Hof for over 4 years. I've known about it for over five.
Can you define what Wim Hof is?
Yeah, because I don't even remember.
Sure, Ian, if you want to, and I could touch or what.
No, you're the expert, man. Go ahead.
Okay, well, Wim Hof, he's a character from he's a Dutchman. He's from Amsterdam, and his wife took her life in the 90s. And she left behind four kids and a loving husband. And so his mission after that was to make sure that nobody else had to go through what his family and what he has gone through. And so it's been his mission throughout life has just been to spread love through personal responsibility and knowing of the body and challenging of the body and the mind. And
You said his name is Wim Hof, and he's Dutch, which means I almost certainly spelled his name incorrectly. I spelled it the way you would expect an American.
Six letters total.
W-I-M-H-O-F.
Okay, I was fairly close then. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So he had always been practicing meditation, and he had always loved to go and get into the cold, get into the local lakes, and they'd always see him there, and they'd say, oh, there's Wim. He's doing his thing, and he was always happy and smiling. There's two documentaries that are about 40 minutes each, and they're both really good.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say was they put some sort of a vest on him, and they had other people that were not with the Wim Hof method that they also had in this study. And this vest had, I don't know, some sort of tubes in it that they flushed with cold water, essentially. So it was like putting cold water all over your chest, essentially, in this vest.
Right.
And so the idea was they wanted to measure people's core body temperatures to see if it would go down, which of course it would in, you know, standard cases, and it did.
Yeah, you're spraying someone with cold water, that's going to make them colder.
Right. I guess the water wasn't directly touching them, but it was in this vest, so it was being flushed with the cold water, so it was cold water essentially moving through this, as I understood it. Anyway, what happened was every other person in the study except for Wim Hof had their temperature lowered, and his did not.
Well, that could just be a result of constantly taking cold showers as well, rather than being mind over matter, since he's trained his body to deal with cold, wet water. But it's an interesting concept, certainly something I would be interested in learning more about.
There's starting to be sort of questionable things that are being done by people who are sort of libertarians in power. Does that make sense?
Like what?
Okay, so for instance, four different things, actually, that I can point to. For example, again, some of this is not precisely libertarians, but it's perceived as sort of being libertarian influenced because it's, you know, it's these government reducing votes at the state house. For instance, the vote on reducing the budget by 3% and everything, which was nice and hailed by freedom lovers, mm-hmm. That also included all the freedom lovers who voted for that. We're voting for a hidden restriction, or it wasn't all that hidden, but it was stuck into the budget, a restriction on abortion rights.
Mm. Yeah,
I mean, abortion is a tough issue for libertarians because there's really no good answer to it. I mean, obviously you want to be pro-choice, but there's a NAP violation, a violation of the non-aggression principle in any direction that you go in regard to the issue of abortion. And a lot of libertarians just don't want to recognize that. You're either forcing someone to allow a human being to trespass on their private, on their bodily autonomy, or you're allowing some living entity to be killed in order to protect that other person's bodily autonomy. There's no good answer here.
As I understand the situation, Dave, that abortion restriction is one of the least restrictive things they could have done.
Another one was Moms for Liberty NH put out a $500 reward for anyone that engaged anyone, like a teacher in the government school system who engages in speech that they think violates the law.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a law against teaching critical race theory in the school.
That's correct.
Which, of course, you know, now it's like how are you gonna ban every teacher from saying everything you don't like?
Well,
right?
I don't know that libertarians had a whole lot to do with that.
Well, they might have, actually. It has been touted, for instance, by the Free State Project. The Moms for Liberty, as I understand it, is consisted of some Free Staters are involved in or founders of that particular group. And I think the point there is to go after the status and make them uncomfortable and say, hey, look, you're not allowed to be teaching racism in the government schools. If you don't like it, take your kids out of the government schools and send them to a private school where they can teach racism. But ultimately, the argument is this critical race theory is essentially racism. And so it should not be taught in these government schools. And I don't disagree with that. If you're going to have government schools, and I don't think any of these liberty reps want to have government schools, but we're not to the point where anyone has proposed to abolish them completely. So in the meantime, they're saying, hey, we don't want kids in government school taught racism.
We both looked a bit more into critical race theory. Of course, I'm limited mostly to what Wikipedia has to say about it. And the positive parts of it sound great, but there's also a lot of really contradictory stuff with it. Like the idea of race as a social construct. Yes, I agree with that 100%. Mm-hmm. But then they go on to say, and the
that's the only part I've agreed with so far with CRT.
Sure. And then they go on to say in the very same sentence here, in fact, that this idea of race benefits white people and marginalizes people of color. So at the same time they're saying race is just a social construct, they're saying, and this social construct helps this one race at the expense of other races. So it's self-contradictory, and that's the part I don't like.
And there's more. There's an article here from the University of Washington Tacoma at mtsu.edu, published in 2009, all about critical race theory and the First Amendment specifically. And so this has been around for a while, by the way. CRT was constructed a few decades ago. And some of the basic tenets, they say, rest on the belief that racism is a fundamental part of American society, which I firmly disagree with.
I could agree with it if they worded it better. Like, modern America was largely built, and racism was largely built in a way that racism was an integral part of it, because that
originally
was true through a lot of American history.
It's government school. Wouldn't you prefer they be putting a freedom-friendly program in place instead of a total status program?
Ends do not justify means. But I have another complaint, a third thing.
All right.
And that is that a Free Stater-led organization has, I don't know if they, I'm not positive they pushed for it, but they called it a victory when it passed. So they were probably pushing for it. And that is the restriction on businesses. Businesses in New Hampshire, I guess, are now forbidden by law from, or at least it's moving closer to where it's being, they're being forbidden by law from mandating that their employees get the vaccine, which is an intrusion on businesses' right to make their own decisions.
Did that actually pass?
I don't think it could possibly have passed yet. It probably is just hitting the legislative circles like the constitutional amendment is, right?
Yeah, I think they were calling it a victory because it had passed a critical step or something like that.
Mm. Well, they're not alone in that. I mean, there are a lot of libertarians, and I've seen these people in the Free State Project group on Facebook talking about it constantly, that businesses need to be prevented from requiring
it
of their employees. Yeah, they're absolutely wrong about that. The
libertarian
position is that the
And again, even if they were right, we don't need another law unless you're willing to pay for the cost of hearing it the way you guys evolved when we got New Hampshire Independence Amendment.
Dave, you're breaking
you
up pretty. Okay, you're back.
We have the Independence Amendment because you guys are the proposal for that legislation because you guys are willing to underwrite it.
It's a very difficult situation to be a libertarian in power because, number one, you're put into awkward positions sometimes where any way you vote, it's a bad way.
It's not just that, though. It's any libertarian who's in the public eye, really. As the Verge article pointed about you, they said, you know, you being a public figure, or however they phrased it, also, quote, amplified your mistakes. And they brought up your opposition to the mask mandate here in Keene as an example of that. It's like, if you're in the public eye, you're going to upset some people.
Yes.
Just by having
including
an opinion.
Including some of your supporters. I mean, that's, you know, people are going to, no one's perfect, and we all don't agree on everything. So it's inevitable that we're going to have some disagreements. Even the few times I have disagreed with some of the state reps, I still am grateful that we have them there instead of terrible people, right? Like,
that's a fair point.
They're good on 90%+ of the issues most all of the time. And we got a really cool organization, the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance, that actually rates these state reps. They look at their votes. They give them a grade, actually, at the end of every year, which is pretty cool. So we got a really neat system in place here that encourages better behavior from these state reps because they want to get that A-plus rating. They want that sort of badge of honor, basically. But if you didn't get the A-plus, it means you got an A, and that means you screwed it up a couple of times, right? You didn't vote right on a few different
issues. But that's better than a B.
It's a lot better than a constitutional threat, which is the lowest potential rating. That's below F, essentially.
Thinking more about it, I think the phrase the end justify the means may need to just be expanded a little bit, because the only way New Hampshire could have decriminalized cannabis in this scenario, if you're correct about how all of it works, is to have gotten the federal government to change how they schedule cannabis.
Yeah. And that might happen eventually, but
it might.
Well, we don't know when.
We can't just say the end doesn't justify the means, because if you just go straight to federal decriminalization of cannabis, is so far away that so much more harm is going to be done through a year more of having cannabis illegal in New Hampshire than would be by adding this one new law. You have to weigh things in moral relative terms. Like, yeah, okay, sure, we adding a new law is bad for whatever reason, right?
But if we here's just take why that we as need to absolute, do it.
Yeah. But if we don't add this new law, the New Hampshire police are going to continue arresting thousands of people a year, and that's a real harm. Adding a law is not as bad as that.
Right. And I understand Ridley is very concerned with, you know, the system and all that. And I'm with him. I wish it would just disappear overnight. But
well, that is the goal.
That's not realistic. That's not going to happen. So in the meantime, you could expand Ridley's statement about the ends don't justify the means and use that to justify never running for office and never getting elected.
Joe Biden wants you to have more faith in the government. See, the issue, as far as I can tell, is that people have too much faith in the government. So much so that the whole concept of science and government and themselves as God and democracy as God has just sort of morphed into this one single religious entity that they worship in insane amounts of fervor.
Well, the head priest apparently disagrees with you.
Yeah, people just aren't being faithful enough. That's you just have to pray a little bit harder.
We need more blind obedience to the state.
And then they can make COVID go away. And they can fix the inflation, even though
even though they caused it.
As I saw earlier today, the Senate has passed a $2.5 trillion debt limit increase. So
yeah,
their solution to having borrowed too much money is to allow themselves to borrow more money.
Which is always the solution, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we knew it was coming for sure. The average American probably knew it was coming as well. But for whatever reason,
the Republicans and the Democrats both agree.
And isn't this close to like a 10% increase to the debt limit?
I don't know what the current debt the previous debt limit was, so I don't know.
Well, if the national debt was like $27 trillion or something like that, which is roughly what it's at, then I have to imagine $28 trillion or whatever was the
It's 29 previous- now, by the way. President Bill Clinton famously pledged in 1993 to, quote, reinvent government, unquote, with an interagency task force. So it's the same playbook.
Yeah.
He's doing the same thing that they've done previously, which is to say, I'm waving my magic pen and we will make our government more efficient, alakazam.
And it's never effective.
No. The signing comes at a critical juncture for Biden to show he can deliver results. The country's seen a strong economic rebound, quote unquote, as a coronavirus relief program sent money directly to Americans. AP, that doesn't help the economy, just so you know.
No, it hurts the economy. It may temporarily make Americans happy.
Yeah.
But that was also, it's been a year since Americans got that $1,200, $1,400 stimulus check, right, whatever it was. I don't think there are very many Americans out there who still have that $1,400.
But support for the president has slumped as the United States faces inflation at a nearly four-decade high. And the coronavirus pandemic lingers. The administration has responded by trying to amplify its message that government can make people's lives easier. When has that ever been the case?
I don't want the government to be efficient. I don't want it to have a streamlined process for turning their wacky ideas into the laws of the land.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it when the government is bloated. Well, not bloated, because in order to get, you know, as large as it is, I mean, in order to be bloated, it must be very large. So I like it to be inefficient and not very good at doing things.
Well, I mean, that's guaranteed to continue no matter what happens as far as Biden has signed an executive order. As the story here at the AP has pointed out, that's supposed to tighten up the ship and make things efficient.
But it won't.
No.
And the services they listed here, the make it easier to get a passport, I mean, that's good. It doesn't affect me because I'm not currently allowed to have a passport. But for most Americans, that's probably a good thing.
I can tell you it won't be easy to get mine back.
No.
They took it.
I suspect what. If all this blows over at some point, it's still going to be very difficult for me to get a passport. Time will tell. But the rest of it, economic recovery following a natural disaster, is just not in a
priority.
Well,
those are three examples that the AP gave. The story says the goal is to implement most of the order's changes across 17 federal agencies within the next year. They say that the existing funds should be enough for agencies to pay for improvements and that better service and efficiency would ultimately save the government money. For travelers, Americans will be able to renew their passports online, they say, instead of having to print out forms and pay with a paper check or money order. New security machines and computers.
Good Lord, you can't even buy a you can't even renew your passport with a credit card or debit card?
Guess not. New security machines and computers with advanced screening features are to streamline the process of going through security lines for the roughly 2 million people who fly daily. The 45 million people with student debt will be able to manage their federal loans through a single portal instead of several websites with different passwords. Paperwork is also to be reduced for people seeking loan forgiveness. So there's some more examples of what it is they're supposed to be doing, how long it will take, how god-awful it will be when they finally, if they finally do, you know, successfully implement these things. Only time will tell. But will this be enough to restore faith in government? Because that's ultimately what Biden wants this to accomplish. See, he's not as concerned with you getting your passport in a quick manner. He wants you to believe in the state.
Well, obviously, I mean, he's the head of the state, so it's useless for the Pope if no one believes in Catholicism, and if people have their faith in Catholicism shaken as a result of, you know, all the pedophile priests that are out there, then it weakens the Pope. If people have their faith in government shaken by inefficient bureaucracies who can't deliver on any of their promises, then they have their faith in Biden. What chain of events would have to occur for Bitcoin to go from the $50,000 or whatever that it's at now to $0 per Bitcoin? Short of a supernova, I don't see it happening. And a supernova would wipe out all life on the planet, so it wouldn't matter.
As far as what could result in that, I mean, there could be some sort of serious bug in the code or something, but that's not likely because it's been audited by probably thousands and thousands of programmers all around the planet over the last decade.
And if there was and they would patch it very quickly if such a thing was found.
There could be a mass exodus of Bitcoiners to something else, you know, something that replaces it and does a better job, and the price plummets. Whether it would go to zero because of that, it seems unlikely.
But there's already stuff that's better than Bitcoin, and none of that caused a mass exodus because Bitcoin has that name recognition.
Yeah, and it has first mover advantage as well, which is how it got the name recognition, because it was there first, and that counts for a lot. So even though it is a slow old dinosaur as far as cryptocurrency is concerned, there are many other cryptos that are faster and more efficient and do things better in a lot of different ways, but none of them have really, really caught on. And Ethereum, as the number two crypto in the world by market cap, isn't going to take over Bitcoin as far as, you know, efficiency is concerned. It costs more to send an Ethereum transaction, so no one's going to use that for money.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more. All for free at freetalklive.com.